So we have a first action item is approval of the agenda. May I have approval, please?
I move approval.
Thank you. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried. Moving on to public comments. We always have public comments for items that are not on the agenda. Does anybody here have any public comment? Thank you. Moving on. Our first item of business is program committee policy review for discussion, starting on page 2. And I understand there was a meeting this morning that just had some changes of the existing policy. Are you ready to address that, Chris?
Sure. So before you have what was a draft of a clean version that was presented to the ad hoc committee this morning, which deals with communications and policies for the district. Also behind that is a red line version as well. The committee went through the draft version and some recommended changes. One was an oversight that came, they was in the red line version, but if you look at section 1.2.3, 1.2.4 on page 3 of the packet, I'm sorry, it might not be the same
no
page.
No, it is 1.23
and 1.24.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Page, just wanted to make sure.
Page 14. How do we get to 14?
So we're on page 14.
I'm sorry. I'm looking at the from the packet this morning. So I just want to make sure we have the right pages.
Is the same that's on the website?
Okay. So it's going to be page 14 of your packet. So page section 1.2.3 and 1.2.4, the last sentence of those two sections where it says this committee may also include volunteer members has been removed.
Say
so
again,
1.2.5,
volunteer committee members?
No, 1.2.3 and 1.2.4.
Okay.
So those have the last sentence is removed from those two sections so that it lines up with the language later on in the other sections.
So it'll be explained later on.
And it comes from the discussion from the February 26th board meeting. Also, I mean, the reason for explaining this, the actual policy will not be presented to the board for the March 26th meeting due to some of these revisions and that will still need to be addressed beyond the board meeting. So
you're saying that the changes that were recommended this morning will not be approved at the March 26th
meeting? Correct, because there's some other outstanding issues that need to be addressed, so we will be bringing the policy back to the committee, the ad hoc committee, in April for...
Okay, and you'll tell us what they are today?
Yeah, I'll communicate. I mean, I may not be able to give all details, but they're...
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so 2.1, the language... mid-paragraph there that talks about any volunteer member who is currently processing or anticipates filing a grant proposal within 1 year of appointment will not be eligible to serve and will be required to resign from the committee. That language is going to be clarified essentially just to say that any volunteer member that serves on, that works or is involved with a grantee will not be able to serve on the board 1 year prior to applying for or being in process of a grant. So that just needed to be cleaned up and clarified there to make sure that there's no misunderstanding in that language. Going to section 3.2, the committee removed the section that talks about the four members consisting of and the itemized areas there. So that is going to be removed and it's just going to state that up to 5 volunteer members, all of whom shall either reside or be primarily employed within the district or the service area of the district. So in that way, it leaves it open to appointment. All right, and that could include potentially county people that are involved with the district itself. So. Section 6, and this is where needs to be discussion that probably will take place at the March 26th board meeting. Is in the first sentence there where it talks about in accordance with the district bylaws, this committee shall include the 2 district directors appointed to the Desert Regional Hospital Governing Board plus one other district board member. So there needs to be some clarification there with regard to directors being involved with both the mm-hmm. hospital
governance. So then you could be on the hospital governing board and not serve on this committee. Is that what you're saying?
Well, the way it reads right now is that those directors that are on the hospital governing board will be the directors that are on the hospital governance and oversight committee.
Oh, so this is program committee guidelines, right?
No, this is for all committees. So this policy that we're looking at is for all committees. The program committee is a section of this policy. So this is talking about the appointment of volunteer community members in each of the committees, but also gives the specific of each committee that the district has. So section 6 is talking about hospital governance and oversight committee.
But I think she's asking how that relates to.
How does that relate to the program?
I'm just indicating to you why the policy, because you asked why the policy would not be presented to the board meeting.
Because this needs, section 6 needs to be removed.
That needs to be addressed at the board meeting. So we can't bring the full policy to the board meeting until that is discussed at the board meeting.
I guess I don't understand. So you want to change the 2 district directors be on the hospital governance and oversight committee?
No, currently nothing is being changed in that section. It's an item on the agenda for the March 26th board meeting.
I see. So the policy for hospital governance and oversight committee will be a separate policy.
No, this is all one policy here. So this section of it is going to be an item that's talked about at the March 26th board meeting.
I see.
So that's why we're not able to bring the full policy revisions to the March 26th board meeting, and will then be brought to the ad hoc committee then in April for full modification of anything that comes from the March meeting, and then fully approved at the April board meeting.
I don't understand why the board just can't approve all of it together so we could start appointing community members to this committee.
The committee had suggested or recommended that we hold the policy until discussion was had at the board meeting.
And the discussion needs to be about the hospital governance and oversight committee issue that's part of the
correct
board, part of the program committee.
No, it's part of the overall committee. So all 4 committees are involved.
We have all 4 committees, but at this point we're only looking at the program committee and the hospital oversight.
What I think we could do as the program committee is what would be the next item to talk about, doing an advertisement process for the appointment of community members, mm-hmm. so that we could start that process of advertising and then receive applications, that sort of thing. And then when policy is approved, then be ready to go with, you know, the interviewing and appointment of community members.
Letty, you attended the policy committee meeting. Was the discussion having to do with an independent policy for the program committee? I mean, is there any way that could be separated?
I think it can be, and that because that the program committee, there really weren't any issues that were unresolved. The only one that we had a question mark was the hospital governance and oversight committee. So if we just pull that out, expecting that everything else is going to be approved by the
Well, we have the other modifications in that. So, I mean, we could potentially, to your point, if we want to submit the maybe we can work it to where we can submit, because we have these other changes mm-hmm. that we're just talking about, so mm-hmm. that, you know, it,
maybe just submit the program committee policy only with those changes and just remove the item number 6 altogether, because that seems to be meeting discussion.
It's one policy, but let me work with Jeff, see
okay.
how we can mm-hmm. we can do that, if we can approve some of it without mm-hmm. the other, because it is all one policy.
Right.
So
yeah, but I know that you were asked to get some clarification and then to bring that at the meeting, the board meeting. Do you think you can
Let me talk with Jeff. Maybe we can have the other modifications done and be part of what's communicated, and then subject to whatever is discussed about the other item. Can be subject to that change.
It could be one option or the other that can be decided at the meeting, so I can understand Kim's
right.
point,
so then we
she
can,
just wants to
right.
get it going already instead of just
yeah, let,
hold.
Mm-hmm. Let's do it that way. Okay.
Great. Any more discussion?
I believe that's all.
Okay. Volunteer community member process starting at page 20.
Okay, so this was assuming board approval of the policy at the March 26th meeting, then recommended language on page 21 that could be a advertisement then that could be published, local newspapers dispersed through the community, and soliciting for community members to apply for appointment to the program committee. So the idea would be to then have the, if the advertisement is approved, then we could be ready to post or publish that advertisement after the March 26th meeting.
Mm-hmm. Any questions? Any discussion about that?
So in addition to the publication, are you also going to do other things like put on our website?
Yes, we'll publish website,
e-blast,
okay. etc. Yes.
Okay, good.
So we'll get a good broadcast through mm-hmm. the district,
mm-hmm.
and then applications will be received. Mm-hmm. We'll put a cutoff as to when the deadline for that is, and then set up to do interview process mm-hmm. selection,
mm-hmm.
and then ultimately present it to the board for whatever the committee has. The applicants that have been chosen to serve on the committee would then be presented to the board for full approval.
Can I, this is kind of related to this in that I anticipate that if a person that's interested in serving on the program committee is going to want to know where the meeting's going to be held, will mm-hmm. all meetings be held here in Palm Springs, or will it be more centrally located like Palm Desert?
I guess that's up to the committee to decide where you'd like to have it.
Yeah, I think it makes sense to make it centrally located.
Because I know that will be a reason, something that an applicant might be interested mm-hmm. in wanting to know.
Mm-hmm. Is Palm Desert City Hall area, is that more centrally located? It's not to people in Indio.
Well, we do have the Raft location that we mm-hmm. have, you know, rented office at that we can schedule for rooms there.
That would work. Mm-hmm.
Easier access.
That's a good idea.
I think that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So. We give direction to the board to approve the process and to look at having the program committee meetings in the future with the RAF Foundation. Is there, we're looking at the, what is this, the third Tuesday? So we have to make sure that there is, that the rooms are available, and if not, we'll find a suitable alternative.
Yeah, so we'll work to get on the schedule on the third Tuesday of each month with a room at RAP.
Okay.
Offices. And then we'll need to probably look at the ad hoc committee when we have that, potentially, Leticia, to mm-hmm. coordinate that.
Okay.
Possibly.
Thank you. Any more discussion? Next is a discussion about our grant process. Who wants to speak to that?
Okay, in the packet you have a flowchart that's been created to so you can visually see what is proposed for the for the flow and the process of the grant. So it would start, you know, at the stage one, which is LOI. Information coming in, being reviewed by staff. If they meet the, you know, requirements, they would move on to a site visit and meeting. And if, meeting requirements, it would move to stage two, inviting for a full grant application, and then moving forward into the program committee review and grantee presentations, etc. Ultimately being presented to the full board for approval of the grant.
And this is using this new software that we've developed or yes. acquired?
Yes, and actually Doug Moore and VIM is our guinea pig. He did the first stage one, and then we sent him stage two and mm-hmm. reviewed. So we're at the point now where it's up at the top of the program.
Mm-hmm. It was kind of the current process, but it will incorporate what we're going to be talking about, like with the grant scoring process, which will be included in the mm-hmm. in the schematic as mm-hmm. well. So there for review how the process would work and flow, and then we can go into the grant scoring process and how that would work. It was the grant application scoring process was approved and directed by the board in November, I believe it mm-hmm. was, to do kind of a trial run with it. The staff is bringing back at this point, we've been working with some other folks on trying to fine tune the scoring rubric and proposing to begin using mm-hmm. this process for scoring grant applications.
Is the scoring rubric part of the grant software, or is that something we developed?
We developed.
Something we developed.
Mm-hmm. But it's embedded into the application process, mm-hmm. so when the grantee is filling out their application, they can have that side by side to look at, and when we're reviewing, it also ties it in as well.
Mm-hmm. So. Is this process consistent with other foundations that give out grants?
Like we did a lot of research on the reviewing. Yes, we did a lot of research on other healthcare districts. We actually had John Epps and Eva mm-hmm. help review as well, because they do a lot of grant reviewing with their process. Mm-hmm. And so they gave us some really good advice on some of the things that we incorporated and maybe changed a couple of words around and stuff like that. But this is pretty standard with a lot of foundations and other healthcare districts that do grant making.
Mm-hmm. Any questions by committee members?
So at staff review, that's an internal process then. And if an applicant does not advance past or staff due diligence, will you inform the committee of if there's certain organizations that did not advance to this or to this level? Or
that's yes.
So
in the next one under program committee where it says staff report, mm-hmm. anything that doesn't make it past the letter of interest, mm-hmm. you'll be notified, so at least you're aware of and then why it was declined. Okay. So maybe they didn't have credited financials, something mm-hmm. of that nature. Mm-hmm. And then all the way through due diligence, it will, no matter what staff's recommendation is, it will come, it's actually not even coming with a recommendation, it's coming with our due diligence. Here's how it scored, here's what, you know, when this has his other hat on, the CFO's comments, so then you will be making that decision on all those aspects. And that's why we have in here, and when you move down through the chart, it's the recommendation of approval or conditional or decline, which is at the hands of the mm-hmm. program committee.
Mm-hmm. Does that include mini grants?
Mini grants currently, and everything in the history goes straight to the CEO.
Mini grants go straight to the CEO.
Staff discretion.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, we always provide a list of what mini grants mm-hmm. have yeah. been approved.
But you do provide a list of...
communicated what has been...
what has been granted, and about what about the ones that haven't been granted?
We can provide that information yeah. as well, yes.
Yeah.
And I think at the next program committee meeting, the grant policy will be brought forward.
Correct.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Okay. We'll talk about. And just for mm-hmm. Yvette and Levy, mini grants are $5,000 or less.
Mm-hmm. And they don't require the organization.
And they don't go. They don't go through this rubric. Right. Right. Here.
And there's no requirement for audited financials.
Right. Yeah. One of my concerns, and it's something I've heard a few times in my history on this board, is that there have been organizations, and I'm not sure, and maybe Donna, you will know, that have expressed interest in applying and they never made it past the initial discussion because somebody on the staff didn't think that it was a feasible grant process or whatever, and that, you know, prior to this, our staff here, prior to this staff, that I was told that somebody made their own personal decision about whether a nonprofit was grant worthy or something like that, so it never even got to this level. I'm wondering if there's something that can be said. One organization was Cancer Partners, and that was, I don't know, maybe 5-6 years ago before I was even on the board, that mm-hmm. I was told that the previous two CEOs was told that they wouldn't qualify. And I don't know if it was personal reasons or, you know, what that was. I'm just saying, is there some way that, you know, that we can protect ourselves without...
And I think that's part of why, you know, we're incorporating, like, the scoring mm-hmm. process and that. And there's standards that each applicant has to meet. So that's what's being said. You know, there's the financial mm-hmm. component. There's the, mm-hmm. You know, the... whatever the criteria are, mm-hmm. and that's just to be able to assess each individual applicant. Mm-hmm. Takes the personal bias out of if there's any.
That's great.
By anyone, it's a very objective
gets
process.
More transparent, which I think is really important for any organization or any foundation. Mm-hmm. That's good, thank you. Well, let's move on. Is there any more discussion?
I think the process is fine. I just want to ensure that we do a good job in getting the word out to a lot of organizations that, you know, that past Cook in the past hadn't really thought mm-hmm. of healthcare districts. So mm-hmm. just doing a little bit more of an outreach effort and to possibly identify you know, some organizations to reach out to.
So, well, part of 2019, we can't do that.
Okay.
We can.
Really?
So
that's good to know. Thank you.
We can.
You can do
fact
finding.
You can give them information.
Right.
For instance, we had some people from the Alzheimer's group at my Rotary Club, and I handed them my card with Donna's name on it, and I said, the grant process is on our website. That is legal. You can't say, you know,
You can't say you can go get the money guaranteed to get money, that sort of thing.
No, you can't do that.
But you can give direct information. The process.
And that's why, you know, when I get out in the community like you do, and you see an organization that we have never heard of before, that's a good excuse to get their information. And whenever I collect business cards, which I try and actively do, I give them to Andrea to go on our e-blast mailing list.
So in September, board meeting, the grant structure that was approved by the board was driven under the pretense that we would also start going into cycle grant base and an RFP process to accomplish exactly what you're asking for. But we were delayed in creating the program committee, because when we brought that forward, we were under the belief that come December, there was going to be an established program committee. So we were actually going to try and start that January. Then with the board made the wise decision to wait till the new board members were appointed, so that delayed obviously the process of the program committee. So as Donna has suggested, at the next program committee, our next big thing would be is a grant policy, which would include that. So how do we reach into the community through RFPs? Or we can do community engagement, where we can bring people and say, okay, so what AB 2019 does let you do is basically bring community members into a room saying, this is what we want to achieve, and let them work amongst themselves, mm-hmm. and then go through an RFP process to mm-hmm. basically get access to funding. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's good to know that you're working on
mm-hmm.
that.
And the healthcare, the priorities that this board made in terms of healthcare for the community, is a good way to drive the RFP process.
Right, get the community to tell us what works. That then the program committee would say, okay, we want our RFP to look like this, mm-hmm. and then it would get email blast out to everybody, not just, you know, it's if you, I'm just going to use homeless as an example. If you're serving homelessness, but you don't just send it to homeless service providers, you send it to everyone to open it up, because like Carol's saying, there could be agencies out there that we don't have any knowledge of. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. I'm okay with
those. Okay, so next on the agenda, I'm having a hard time going back and forth. Is it the expanded area grant funding?
Before we move on, I was just wondering when I was looking at the scoring, and I was questioning whether there was kind of a little duplication. Financial stability and organizational.
I knew you were going to ask that one. So that was John Epps. So we actually had financial compliance and stability as one component, and it was with our meeting with John Epps and Eva that they strongly suggested that be taken into two different scores. And so we reworked some of the wordings, thinking compliance means, are you following, you know, the concept of good nonprofits should have audited financials, the board should review those audited financials, they should also see their financials on a regular basis. Are they budgeting, or is it tied to their strategic plan, that sort of thing. Whereas the stability aspect of it is there some sort of plan in the sense of their fundraising? Are they just solely, there's like one main source of funds for that entity, or is it private, you know, grants, events, that sort of thing. So that's why actually we took their recommendation and divided that into two.
I think it's kind of duplicate, but I'll just I'll let you handle it and see what kind of response you get. Maybe after the first go around, you reach out to the applicants and say, what did you think of the application? Because I know that that's helpful, is that you see, you want to make sure that it makes sense to them and that you're getting the kind of information that you hope to get.
Okay.
But maybe at some point in the early stages of it, just to get some feedback.
So I seem kind of, because we do also have fiduciary compliance.
Right. They're kind of separate
right.
together.
So we actually, we've streamlined this based on our subject matter mm-hmm. meeting, but we did send this out way back when last year to how many nonprofits, Alejandro, did we get responses? Like 30 some
30,
odd?
I think it was 36. Uh-huh.
36 nonprofits from one end of the other to give us their feedback of what they thought of the scoring, because like you said, exactly, to get their input. And it was really quite positive. But I am in agreement. I think this has to be a bit of a working process until you try it on and then evolve it based on how does it really work once it's in play.
Yeah. Once you get the kind of answers, if you see that they're answering the same way.
Exact same, exactly.
Then you might want to
right.
go back and tell John. Right. See, you were wrong.
I'll leave you for that pleasure.
Any more discussion? Okay, expanded area grant funding.
Okay, as I think most of us know, with the expansion of the district in November, along with that, the board had previously defined and set aside essentially $300,000 per year to be utilized for grant funding in the expanded area. And so since we've established the program committee now, we would like to discuss that. How would the program committee like to work with those funds for the expanded area? Some ideas, I mean, just to throw out and obviously open for discussion, you know, might be to, you know, with even like current grantees that we're working with that are serving the district members of the prior area, that maybe we look at expanding that a little bit to provide funding for residents in the expanded area. So that's an option that could be looked at to add some additional funds from the $300,000 to expand on current grantees that are applying for services to those residents in either side of the district. Other options certainly open for discussion and how the program committee would like to, you know, pursue expending those funds or committing those funds.
Is it our responsibility as a program committee to look at how we might go outside this $300,000 and work with other outside foundations, look at a different tax structure, go for bonds? Is that part of our role here?
We do need to look at definitely expanded funding for sure, and mm-hmm. that will be something that the district and staff will be working with to try to expand on that. This is, you know, regarding the current $300,000 that the district has committed from unrestricted funds, as to how ideas of how the committee would, you know, like to see those funds work with in the community. And obviously it will take, you know, probably some outreach in addition to working with current grantees, that sort of thing, but looking for, you know, some ideas or some thoughts as to.
Mm-hmm. Well, if we're going to provide the same level of funds to our nonprofit partners in the East County, it's been suggested we need $4 million, not 300. I mean, $4 million is not just $300,000.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I would like to see how we might be able to come up with $4 million instead of this little bit that we're working with. And you know, maybe at this point we can go to some of our foundation partners and maybe some of the grant applications. We can say, you know, will you match this, this, and this, if that's feasible. But, you know, maybe we need a development person on the foundation level to look at that.
Yeah, it is an area that we have to work with, mm-hmm. for sure.
Shall we get, is it too soon to ask for ideas on how to go after new taxes in the East County?
I think so. I think it's premature at this point because I think it's so new that I think we need to prove ourselves or to be able to get a little bit more support of what we're doing to be able to have a successful vote in our favor. I'm not clear about what you're saying here. You're saying that what I'm understanding is that $300,000, you've allocated it. So are you asking whether this committee is looking at how we make that available, looking at some of the organizations that you funded in the past to add on to some funding for them to expand their clients? Is that what you're asking right now?
I mean, that's an idea. But, you know, just throwing out for discussion what other opportunities that we might think of that we can utilize that $300,000 for that's currently committed, recognizing that, yes, we need to expand on the resources.
And to give you an example, when Doug had contacted me about applying for another grant, he said, well, now that the boundaries are expanded, instead of just always doing the district residents that show the zip code from the original boundaries coming to the clinic, can we now, you know, ask for some more dollars to cover all residents? And like, as you mentioned, you know, right now,
and that's why we did this. Doug wouldn't have to get his clientele by zip code.
So just something also for the program committee to consider. So as you know, this is why we started doing the outreach meetings into the East Coachella Valley, to start listening to community members and understanding. And part of that process, we're actually showing them the three focus areas of homelessness, access to behavioral and primary care, and healthy eating, active living, and asking them and another, so four, to prioritize, to help bring back that information. And we should be finished that by the end of April.
Yes.
To help program committee, because as you can imagine, between Doug and maybe one other nonprofit, that $300,000 could be eroded very quickly. And so we want to at least bring forward to the program mm-hmm. committee, here's what community members are saying the priorities are for them. And then you would then guide staff on going, okay, this is how in this first year we would use that $300,000. We want to do it maybe in, so for example, a lot of healthcare districts actually have a maximum limit on their grants. They actually have, you know, one in particular I'm thinking of is no more than $25,000. So do you do that in the first year? So you say, first year we only want $25,000 maximum per agency, so it gets spread out amongst many rather than, you know, $150,000 to two. So those are the kind of things that we're looking for from the program committee to give staff direction. So then that information is yours, that it can start to be communicated out into the community.
When I was, just for my clarification, trying to understand if that's what you were asking, you know, at first I'd think, okay, well, that makes sense because you want to have equity, you know, one end of the valley or another. But then again, those issues are maybe not as prevalent or as high in the East End. So I like what you're doing, that you come up with a list of what our partners are thinking are the highest need, because it is limited funding. And so if we can address that, and then if we have organizations that have been doing really good work and that they are, you know, rate high enough in that list of priorities, then you know, then they can apply as well. But so I like that strategy, just from my own personal opinion. I like the being able to
And then coming up with a level of, you know, if it's the 25,000 to spread out, that sort of thing, which seems to make sense, but, you know, well.
Did you have something you wanted to say then before I... It's okay. My thinking is, and maybe Doug and family can help, you know, we 25,000 per organization is a drop in the bucket when we've got serious, you know, homeless emergency situations and behavioral health services that, you know, need a lot of money, and it's part of our priority. So I would just like to say, you know, what is it going to take to get to solve the problems rather than have a limit per agency? You know, what agency is doing the best job in eliminating homelessness and eliminating hunger, eliminating behavioral health problems that we need to go forth with? And, you know, we need a big vision and a big plan. We've got a lot of work out there to handle, as Yvette and Letty know firsthand as well. So, you know, I think we need some big funds to solve big problems.
I agree, and that's something that I think staff is going to be, like you said, starting to look at that, but to get the money out there sooner, the $300,000 is something to start with. Mm-hmm. And I like your ideas on how to approach that with the prioritizing, and then being able to go with that list. And also, FYI, on the page 3242, that right above the Desert Healthcare District Grant Program, can you remove the word the North Shore and just put including North Shore?
Where is that again? I'm sorry.
It's on page 3242 at the very bottom. It's just it just shows that we don't know our area. We put the North Shore.
Including North Shore.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
City. Okay.
Okay.
Did that help clarify staff?
It does help. And
I don't know. What is the answer we give to then other organizations when they do call and say, okay, we've got $300,000, can we write a separate grant for that? Or,
well, I think it allows
application. Once you get that list of priorities, then you know that it will meet that criteria, that after they meet that criteria, then that you can give them the go-ahead that it would...
So we would hold specific to those priorities,
yeah,
versus the CBRM or Martha's that are, mm-hmm, still serving,
yeah,
homeless, and homeless is part of our focus,
yeah,
area?
Yeah, because the money's going to go out too fast if you just open it up to everybody who is providing services. I think it needs to be part of that list of priorities, and you're going to determine if it's going to be... you know, there's a list of 20... unmet needs, and you then say, okay, well, the top five are the ones that are that we really realistically can address. Then being able to come up with, like you said, do we do grants of up to 25,000, and you bring that back if you think that that's you know, something that would be you know, manageable as a first step. But we know it's only the first step, but I really think that you have to manage it rather than just let it be a free-for-all. And you have some control over it by saying, these are our top priorities for this area. It's going to be, you know, let's say diabetes education. It's going to be, you know, whatever it is that you say that are the issues.
Okay.
But it has to be something that you are driving by identifying the top, you know.
Okay. So then we have four community focus areas that we are restricting basically right now grantees to identify one of those focus areas now, and sort of like on this side. What if there are organizations that present the same kind of needs that the East is showing, and say, well, why can't we have some funds then to address a transportation issue?
Can I bring clarity? So we have purposely not, we've stayed true to the strategic plan. So even when we're going into the community, we're staying true to our four focus areas. The only one we haven't done is what we call the QSAT, which is the catch-all, right? So we've talked about homelessness, and then we go into a conversation about primary care and mental health, and then we go into access to healthy foods and that. The key difference is we're still saying stay in those buckets, but when you're talking to an agency down in Mecca Thermal Oasis and even parts of Coachella and Indio about homelessness, the community members may not be talking about homelessness on the street. They may be referring to the five families living in a single wide trailer because they can't access something else. It's still driven in that category of, for them, it's the crowding, not actually homelessness, that is driven, but it's under the same pretense of, this is, instead of us living on the street, this is how we accommodate it.
And that's the wrong message we're getting out, because we just don't look at people living on the street. It's not part of
all. Well, that's why we're not putting the message up. That's why we're learning all this from those groups. Is there, we're having conversations where they're feeding back information saying, you know, like Karen Borja at the last focus group was very clear that in the Latino, the Latin American language, there's not actually a word for homelessness.
She told me that.
Right. And so to really think about how we talk about it, and it was talking about how we as staff did a whole bunch of research on what we call precariously housed. That's what they're really referring to down there. So we're not leaving our four focus areas. We're just understanding how those four focus areas affect the new district area. And with that, we also know the Far East is going to be significantly different than when we have a conversation in Indian Wells and La Quinta. And so what we're trying to do,
no,
right, so we're trying hard to have the conversation to find, is there some similarities? Is there some common ground? So if you said, okay, this is where the $300,000 is going to be invested, that whole area is going to be fairly happy. You're never going to make everybody happy, but at least you can show you did the best effort to find alignment that all of those cities can align, going, you know what, this will benefit all of us.
I like the fact that you start with the letter of intent, because at that time you're not wasting their time by them doing a whole application when you know very well that your limited funds are not going to allow them to really be competitive.
Right.
So yeah, I understand what you're saying, that you know you're not telling us enough. Well, the thing being is that you're going to have to, and I know you do this already. You know, but it's just going to be a lot tougher with $300,000 to stretch it and to really justify how does it rise to the top.
Right.
You know, and it's right. Meeting that, you know, is it consistent with our strategic plan? Is it consistent with what we're listening, the listening sessions? Is it consistent with the capacity? You know, all these things, and it's just going to be really, really tough, I know, but
right.
I'm sure you're up to it.
And Carol, you're
up. I just don't, you know, when you talk to grantees, then you know, like Doug,
right?
You know, like, oh, can I apply to the district pot for your residents that are being served at our clinic, and then can I apply to the not the East Valley pot for to cover some of the residents that we're seeing that don't live in the original existing boundaries,
right?
That was you know, and then that was just some kind of more of a process,
because
the money's been available for quite a while.
And that's what the same thing. That's something that popped up when I read this first. I thought, what are they saying? Are they, and you know, are they gonna? How are they gonna separate? You know, the an organization that's applying for this pot of money over here, and do they dip into the $300,000?
Because it's separated already. I mean, we've already separated it. So we're starting with that base. You're starting with the ad valorem tax base, and then the unrestricted base. So.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and that's, you know, why we had a foundation, so that we could accept other private funds into the foundation, match it with ad valorem funds that would cover the whole valley. And I think that that's what our point is, so how we need to go forward is expand our foundation efforts, find other sources of income, and continue the conversation about taxes and bonds.
And to your point, Carol, so when you have this information from all those community members, and this is, as you know all too well, this is an ongoing conversation. This conversation can't stop. Then you start to formulate a strategy, as you positioned, and then you can go out and look for outside funding. Now you have a strategy, mm-hmm. right? Because foundations from outside are not going to just fund pass-through money.
No.
So what they're looking for is they're getting behind the district and foundation strength as being the gatekeeper to a plan. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're trying to do is establish what is that plan. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Any more discussion? Okay. On to Grant 95, Coachella Valley Volunteers in Medicine.
Yeah, if I could just make a quick comment. There's a numbers have been changed, switched around. It's 121,005. You'll see on the agenda, not 112,500.
Okay. If on page 36, it's correct.
Yes.
So, who's going to talk about this, Donna?
Yeah, so this is, it's almost kind of like a renewal. We've been funding Coachella Valley Volunteers in Medicine for the last 2 or 3 years. They've been taking care of our district residents, those are uninsured and underinsured. Their board had made a decision a couple years ago that they would also take those individuals that are below the 200% poverty level, even if they do have ACA coverage. A lot of times they just can't even afford the co-pays. So Doug is here if you had any specific questions, but they have figured out their operating costs that it costs $135 per visit with an average of 3 visits per client that comes from the Desert Healthcare District original boundaries.
How many days are you open at that?
So we're open Tuesday through Friday, 9 hours a day, and then alternate Saturdays, depending on patient load. So average stops be 40 hours a day.
Okay. I drove by there on a Saturday and it was closed, and I was just wondering.
So that must have been the alternate.
Yeah, exactly.
If I may, I noticed under your notes under financial review, our audit has been completed now, and actually we will not have a net loss of $70,000. We'll actually show revenue somewhere right around $111,000. There was a grant that was received in December of 2018 that the accountant and I put into unearned income, and when the auditor came in, she said, no, it's general operating because it wasn't tied to anything specific. So she released that, and we'll move it back over to revenue, showing for 2018. So we'll actually have a surplus closing out the year.
And is there, of the medical and the dental, is there a greater need for one or the other, or equally?
Oh, gee, you know, depending on how you look at it, I can answer that question both ways. Dental, of course, a number of people who were able to get Medi-Cal, qualified for Medi-Cal services, don't necessarily have dental insurance. So that we do have a number of individuals who do not have, may have medical insurance, but don't have dental insurance. So in that sense, it's higher. But in terms of services provided, dental services are much less than the medical services. We have 2 dental operatories. We have 6 exam rooms. So we can theoretically see really well, have 3 volunteer medical providers at one time. We can really only have 1 dental provider at one time. And then also, it's just much more difficult to get dentists to volunteer than it is the physicians. Not only do we work with retired physicians, but very closely with Eisenhower Hospital, primarily who give some of their faculty admin time to come over, but also just generally and or to be preceptors. So we also work with both the internal medicine and family medicine programs at Eisenhower taking their residents. So we see many more medical patients than we do dental patients, for sure. But the need is great for both. Just a quick little update. Last year, 2018, we were able to adjust our budget and put in additional money so that not only are we just doing cleanings, x-rays, extractions, and fillings under dental, but we're also doing some crowns now, as well as some full dentures. So we're able to provide that, and it's a case-by-case basis. Since we started that early in 2018, I didn't have to say no to anyone. The dentists are really good about, you know, looking at that, and we do work with other programs such as SAGE for individuals that we can't help maybe because of the needs that they have. So we do refer those patients out. We try to focus, or I should say prioritize medical patients who need dental care as well, because we do see a number of patients, especially diabetic, where their diabetes is out of control, and one of the reasons is because of the systemic infection that they have from their oral hygiene, which is not allowing them to get their dental or their medical care, their medical, blanking out on the word that I want, but you understand what I mean. I can see by the shaking head, getting their, you know, if it's their diabetes, their A1C levels, losing weight, whatever it is, they're not able to get that under control. So what we've really begun doing a couple of years ago and worked on it more last year and will continue it this year is making sure that medical patients, that medical provider is referring them for dental care regardless of their diagnosis, and especially for those individuals who have diabetes right now, is that being one of those definite connections between oral health and general health.
And I know you have a robust diabetic support program there too.
Yeah, and it's growing even more. Mm-hmm. We started doing our own. We used to rely on Eisenhower Health. Now, as it's called, Eisenhower Health, to assist in our diabetes program. So they still act as a consultant, but what we were able to do a year and a half ago was get one of our staff certified as a diabetic life coach through the American Diabetes Association. So she now is doing that diabetes education herself. That's an 8-hour class over the course of 4 weeks, 16 hours, I'm sorry, over the course of 4 weeks. And she is, I shouldn't say 4 weeks, four sessions, and they alternate every other Saturday. So she does that, and because she's interacting with the patients in the clinic, she knows many of them by name, they see her, so that relationship that she has with the patients is really blossoming. And so when she calls them and say, hey, your doctor referred you to this class, and you need to come, and this is why, they tend to take it a little more seriously, because it's someone that they know. The other thing that we did there is start to make it much more experiential for those patients. So every one of those classes, they deal with a food issue that actually results in a lunch, them preparing a lunch. So they'll look at, for example, food nutrition labels and why they need to pick this food over something else. And then how can they, you know, use that, and how can they make a good, healthy lunch? So, you know, it's not just as simple as, you know, giving up tortillas or rice and beans, and most of them, I use those examples because most of our patients are, you know, Latino or Hispanic, but rather what can they substitute? You know, sometimes it's appropriate if you can get someone to go from flour tortillas all the time to corn tortillas, but that's not going to have, you know, big impact. So we're looking at larger impact, getting rid of the, you know, the protein and the rice and the beans together for, you know, for a couple of meals a day, and having them do something with a salad. So they'll actually make the salad and then get to share it. And the other thing that we've done is they can bring in another family member with them, because even though maybe it's only one person in the household that's diabetic, oftentimes
they're not the cook.
The caregiver. Well, they're not the cook, or maybe it's the caregiver that is the cook. And, you know, they're going to make meals for the whole family.
Yeah.
And if the family, you know, you say, here's this lovely kale salad that has chicken and pomegranate and, you know, all that stuff, they're like, But if they get it tasted, they're like, well, this actually really isn't bad. Yeah, I could do this once a week, or I can do this, you know, twice a week. So it's those behavioral sort of changes which we're trying to move more to as well. And then we just, through a grant that we received from California Wellness Foundation, we've been able to hire a part-time individual to work with care management. So for those non-compliant and or high-risk diabetic patients, we're actually following up with them and putting them on a case management, similar to a hospital might use for case management or an insurance company might use for case management, where we're contacting them and saying, hey, look, this is why the doctor has referred you. This is what's going to happen if, you know, you don't lose your weight, if you don't lose weight, if you don't bring your sugar levels down, if you don't do all that stuff, if you're not coming in you know, at least quarterly to have your A1Cs checked. If you're not, you know, whatever it may be, these are the end results. So they're really working with them, giving them support and encouragement that also involves the educational classes and really following them step by step until we start to see some compliance. Mm-hmm. So that is a 2-year grant. And so we're really confident that we're going to be able to see some better outcomes, which is something that, I'll be very honest, you know, VIM has not really looked at outcomes because we're using so many, you know, we're just seeing the patients when they come in and giving them the care that they need immediately. And there's not a lot of consistency there in the volunteers, so that's something we're working on as well. Sorry, that's a long answer to your question.
I have one more question for you before anybody else chips in. I've referred patients to you, and if I can give them an address, you know, and how to drive there, but I need how to get there by bus. Yeah. Is there somewhere that's available?
So, yeah, we do put it on our flyer that looks at patient recruitment. It's bus line 86. It's also on the website as well.
But how do you get to 86 from Desert
and
Hot Springs?
They need to be looking at, We could, you know, let me look and see if we can do that a little bit better.
Yeah, maybe a Sunline bus with arrows
something. Yeah, maybe we just get the
rooms. Doesn't Sunline 86. Have that?
Sunline.
Yeah, I think they have it. If you go on Sunline, you just say where you are and where you're going, and it tells you.
So maybe we can look at getting that available.
Yeah. On your site, like a link.
Yeah.
It would be
a handout
to
homeless people.
Well, we can include
it
as well in that other information.
Okay.
Right.
Any
that's
other
good.
Questions?
I have a question about the budget. Facilities you have for office, rent, mortgage, $94,200. What does that cover?
So that's what... So if you look, that's on the expense side. If you look on the income side, there's also a line item for donated rent of $94,000.
Okay.
Actually, on the expense side, it should say $94,201. In our audited statements, it does. I probably didn't put it on there. I always forget that dollar. That's our rent for the facility that we pay to the County of Riverside. And the way we've come up with that $94,200 is just looking at price per square foot. And that was updated 2 years ago. We need to update it again for 2019 to get the average price per square foot for medical facility offices in our area.
They so only it's, get it's a watch. Copy of your budget.
Okay.
So that's
you,
not
yeah. I have the one that you wrote in, the operational cost. So you're saying that you write it down as an in-kind, but you get it back free.
We get it, so on the expense side, it comes in at $94,200 as an expense, but on the income side, it also comes in as an in-kind donation.
Okay.
So they wash each other out, with the exception of $1.
Okay, that's what I thought. Okay, I just kind of like that. What happened? They used to get it free, now
we can't. Yeah, no.
Okay, thank you.
We still do get it.
You would know, being from the supervisor's office.
Any other questions? The purpose of the program committee is to make a recommendation to the board for funding, and this is an action item.
I move approval.
In second.
All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Is there, do we need roll call for that?
I don't think so. Recommendation
it's a recommendation to
right.
the board.
Okay.
Motion carried. Great. Is there any more business?
We skipped over item 5, which was grant proposals under development. If,
okay, what
if anybody wants to look at 34 or 35. I didn't know if there was any comments with that. Or
I see
or
that.
Not,
mm-hmm.
so.
Which one did we skip?
Sorry, it's
page 34.
34 and 35. It's there for information, but if you obviously have any questions or... Okay. Just wanted to make sure that that was addressed. Otherwise, those are the only items for the final items on the agenda.
So the Health to Hope Clinic, that's the mobile unit?
Yes.
And we're talking with UCR School of Medicine about sharing it?
Still. Good. Yes, he has an MOU with him. It actually has 40 MOUs with organizations all over the place. He actually has one with Tenet as well. The place went out here. Outside the emergency room.
Very cool. get more information about that.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be on our agenda April, May?
Hopefully in April. As a program committee?
Mm-hmm. Cool. All right. Super cool. Any other items to discuss? All right. Meeting adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.